I should warn you, I've gotten over jet lag, which means I'll get a much harder talk today. I wanted to get down to some details, and the main goal today is to explain to you what a log structure is, and sort of explaining enough examples in a very detailed way, so that you can hopefully start to get some intuition for what they are. So there are some general slogans. A log structure is something you can put on certain kinds of schemes, which make them actually look smooth if, or non-singular if they aren't. And they're also a great category for keeping track of the kind of things we talked about last time, things like tangency conditions. But I think one should start with the actual definition. So a log scheme. X is a scheme. Now, I'm going to follow a standard convention here, which is that if I just write a Roman letter, it will mean a log scheme. And if I underline it, I mean the underlying scheme that doesn't know about the log structure. So it's a scheme X underlined along with a sheaf of commutative monoids. I'm not going to say commutative again. All my monoids will be commutative. So that's you can add, and you have zero, but you can't necessarily subtract commutative monoids, which I'll write as M sub X, along with a monoid morphism of X, structure map, from MX to OX. Now, I say this is a monoid homomorphism, which means I need to tell you how I'm going to add things in OX, and I'm going to do that via multiplication. So this is a monoid under multiplication. Okay, so of course, multiplication has an identity, namely 1, but you can't necessarily invert. And then there's one condition on this step, such that alpha x induces an isomorphism from the inverse image of the sheaf of invertible functions. Let me make that star look a bit smaller. So that's the sheaf of invertible functions on x to ox star. Is an isomorphism. Okay, so that is a log scheme. Now, this is, I think, one of the most impenetrable definitions I've ever come across, because it's extremely simple and it tells you absolutely nothing about the complexities that are going to lie in trying to understand what this does for you. I want a category, so before I give you an example, let me define the categories. I need to define a log morphism. So definition, morphism of log schemes, f from x to y is a morphism of the underlying schemes. If I was really being precise, I would underline F2, but I don't feel being that pedantic today. It's a morphism of schemes. And a map, which I'll call F flat, from the pullback of MY to MX, such that compatible with the structure map, so such that F inverse MY, F flat to MX, goes to O, F inverse OY. Of course, because this is a scheme map, you also have a So you have this given map F flat from the pullback of MY to MX. That's a morphism of sheaves of monoids on X. You have the structure maps. In this case, it's the pullback of the structure map here and here. And you also have pullback of regular functions. And this should be commutative. So it's compatibility condition of the pullback of sections of this monoid with pullback of regular functions. Okay, so that's the category. So let's get some examples. Okay, the easiest example is to take MX to be OX star and alpha X the inclusion. So that clearly satisfies this. And this is known as the trivial log structure on X. And that allows you to embed the ordinary category of schemes, or the category of ordinary schemes, into the category of log schemes. Because, say, a log morphism between two trivial guys, well, the F-flat, because these are just inclusions, the F-flat is induced by F-star. Okay, so that's the simplest example. That doesn't tell you anything, because it's not interesting. Okay, so here's really the fundamental example. So let's let D contain an X be a divisor. Again, if I was really going to be consistent, I'd write it like that. So suppose we have a divisor. So let's let J be the inclusion of the complement of the divisor in X. And let's take MX. What we're going to do is we're going to push forward the sheaf of invertible functions on X minus D and intersect it with the sheaf of regular functions on X. So this is just a fancy way of saying MX are the set of regular functions on X which are invertible off of D. So they become invertible once you restrict to X minus D. So the only zeros lie of functions allowed lie in D. And then what's the structure map? The structure map is just the inclusion, the natural inclusion into OX. So again, this is trivially satisfied because any invertible function, of course, still lies in MX. And if you want to think about what this means for morphism, if we have, say, two divisors, D contained in X, E contained in Y, and F a morphism from X to Y of the underlying schemes, when does that induce a log morphism? So, i.e., when does it induce? Because we have these MXs are included in here, we just really need this subset here of functions invertible off E to map to functions invertible off D. So what we need is that this induces a log morphism. If F inverse of E is contained in D. Right? That way, if you have a function on Y, which is invertible off E, its pullback is going to be invertible off F inverse of E, which means it's invertible off D in particular. So in this case, we can think of these things as just pairs, and we get a morphism between pairs as long as the divisor E pulls back to something contained in D. So just to keep a very concrete example in mind, just take f from a to a1, given by xy, goes to x times y, and take d containing a2 to be defined by xy equals 0, and e containing a1, the origin. And of course, the origin pulls back to xy equals 0, so this defines a logmorphism between a2 to a1. Now, of course, this is not a smooth morphism in the ordinary sense. The inverse image of...
I think you have it backwards, don't you? I mean, it'll be invertible outside of the inverse image of E, right? I could be wrong, but...
You mean this should be contains D?
The function is good outside the universe.
No, this is right.
What?
Right, so the zeros are allowed to...
It depends on things down. Better, then you could have functions vanishing more places. Than
yeah.
D, and I guess you don't want that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the point is the function vanishes on E, pulls back to something that had better vanish at most in D.
Okay. Okay.
So I guess you don't want to consider the monoid just OX, because that would be like adding in all devices.
So, of course, that is a perfectly decent log structure, but we're going to rule those out, something like that out later for... The category, as I've discussed now, is way too big, and we're going to refine things a bit later. So there are lots of completely crazy things you can dream up, and most of them we don't like. Okay, so in particular, here's one thing, one way that I like to actually visualize log structures. So we always have... an exact sequence so OX star by definition maps via alpha X inverse includes into MX, so you can take a look at the quotient, which I'm going to call M bar X goes to zero, and this thing here we call the ghost sheaf. I like to think of this as the combinatorial information about the log structure. So, for example, if we just take the origin in A1, right, so we have a line, we have the origin. The point is, away from the origin, these two sheaves actually agree. Right? In a neighborhood that doesn't include the origin, functions have to be invertible. It's only sections of MX in the neighborhood of the origin that are allowed to do something interesting, and all they can do is vanish to some order at the origin. So in fact, locally near the origin, sections of MX look like an invertible function times t to the n, so phi is invertible. Those are the only functions that vanish in the neighborhood of the origin to order n. And then the sheaf m bar x is just the skyscraper sheaf with supported at zero with stock, the natural numbers. So the natural numbers here, since I'm going to be using this a lot, there's always this disagreement as to whether zero is a natural number. And, of course, we have to include 0 because it might vanish to order 0. And if we take xy equals 0 inside A2, so you have the two coordinate axes. Away from the coordinate axes, mx and ox star agree. And then you have a copy of n on the 0 set of x. I guess that's y. and a copy of n on the zero set of x. Over here, the stalk is n squared. And what that's telling us is locally, we're allowing functions that can vanish to some order along the x-axis and to some order along the y-axis. So any section of mx locally near the origin can be written like this. And the stalk sheaf m bar remembers the exponents a and b. So this is an example. One thing I don't like about the log structure Ox is that m bar here might be something pretty hideous. And I like m bar to be a nice constructible sheaf of this sort. So before we go on to more complicated examples, let me explain why, even at this level, this gets at some basic idea of tangency conditions. So let's consider the case so D contained in X, X non-singular, D a non-singular divisor. Okay, so I have a picture here. Here's X, here's D. M bar X will just look like a copy of N along the divisor D, recording the order of pole or order of zero of a function along D. Now let's consider a map from C with a point on it. Okay, so again, I'm taking a curve, some curve, I don't care what curve, a non-singular curve. And P is a point in C. So I'm taking the log scheme coming from the divisor P in C, and I'm mapping it to X, D. All right, so from what I said over here, this is where this condition is very important, I need the inverse image of D to be contained in P. So let's call this F. Need F inverse of D to be contained in the set P to be a log morphism. Okay, so in other words, it has this curve is only allowed to touch D once at P. Not only that, let's analyze what's happening at the level of the Gauss sheaf. So we have the curve, if I draw the curve C over here, the point P, and again we have a copy of N at this point P. So let's look what's happening locally here. So this goes to this neighborhood here. This is the map F. So this is supposed to induce, by pullback of functions, induces a map F flat. So F flat from the pullback of MX to MC induces a map because F flat is compatible with pullback of functions, of invertible functions, induces a map, which I'll call F bar flat, from F star M bar X to M bar. And then I need to define, just like a pre-sheaf, I can define a sheaf, I can define the associated log structure. Is defined by So what's the problem with this? First of all, this may not have all the invertible functions, or it might have a number of things mapping to each invertible function. So what we do is the following. So we take P plus OX star, and then we divide out by the submonoid consisting of, or subgroup, consisting of things generated by things that form P alpha of P inverse, where P ranges over all elements of alpha inverse OX star. So in other words, we're identifying an element in here with an element of here, provided alpha of P is invertible. So this essentially puts in all of the invertible functions, and if you had two things mapping the same invertible function, they'd be identified. Okay, so this just fixes the problem, and obviously the structure map here would be to OX would be the obvious one, namely P phi goes to alpha of P times phi. Okay, so it's in general hard to get an intuition for what this is. This could be something pretty crazy, and then you do something and get something equally crazy. So I want to give you some sense. Well, here's the most useful situation when we apply this. So if f from x to y, so I've underlined this, which means it's a scheme morphism. And y has a log structure, my, then I get a pre-log structure on x. So how do I do that? Well, I just pull back my by the map f, pull back of sheaves. I have the structure map, alpha y, that induces a map to f inverse oy. And then I have the structure map of the scheme morphism, namely f upper star, pullback of regular functions, goes to ox. So this composition is now just a map from some wild and crazy sheaf of monoids on x to ox as a pre-log structure, and then I take the associated log structure. So we write the associated log structure on x as f upper star my, okay, as opposed to f inverse. And again, so this notion of pullback of log structure, it's a bit hard to get used to what it's doing. But as I said, I like to visualize log structures by thinking about what that sheaf M bar is, what the ghost sheaf is. Because that tells me something about the combinatorics of the log structure. And so we have the following fact. We have f star my bar is equal to f inverse m bar y. So the ghost sheaves are just pulled back. And of course, what you're doing is you're changing the pullback. F star my is an extension, and you have an exact sequence of OX star to f star my goes to f inverse m bar y. That's what this is saying. Right, so the my, you would have in a similar exact sequence, but with oy star, and we're changing that oy star to ox star, but we're not changing this. So we're just pulling back this sheaf, this ghost sheaf. So now I can get back to a question that was somewhere over in this direction. I don't remember quite where. We can take 0 goes to a1 and take the log structure on a1 given by the point 0. So I claim that the pullback, if this is y and this is x, f and this is f star my, is the standard log structure, is the standard log point. So this gadget here. Okay, so this is, I think, where life starts to get complicated. Is that it's frequently the case that you might say the divisor inside a variety, you think of the inclusion map, you're happy thinking about the divisorial log structure of D on X, because that's just functions on X. And then you pull that back log structure back to the divisor D, and suddenly you have things you can't interpret as functions anymore. For example, you know, these things, this factor n here, you can't interpret as functions. Let me just check. Let me go just, because I really want to go slowly and carefully here and get you used to thinking about these things. Let's check this claim here. So what's f star my? So f star my is just, well, when you pull back a sheaf to a point, that's just the stock of the sheaf at the point. If you're used to doing pullback and coherent sheaves, that's not what I'm doing. I'm just doing ordinary sheaf theoretic pullback. This is the stock of MA1 at 0, which you can think of as invertible functions in a neighborhood of 0 cross N once you've chosen a local coordinate. Right, so something in here, phi N, corresponds to some function phi t to the n. Okay, so let me see if I can finish the argument up here so I don't lose the map. Okay, so what's this? Well, first of all, I just took f inverse my. I have to map it to Ox. So we get the pre-log structure alpha from O star A1 comma 0 cross n to k just takes phi comma n to, well, what am I doing? That's supposed to be the function or germ of the function phi t to the n. And then I evaluate it at t equals 0. That's what I'm doing, right? F upper star is just evaluation of the function. This section here is a function on y in a neighborhood of 0. We evaluate it at 0. Okay, so then we're supposed to take so the pullback f star mx, my, in this case, just copying this down, is supposed to be cross k star, right, that's the k star, modulo this equivalence relation. And basically all we're doing is we're identifying an invertible function here with the value at 0. So we have far too many things in here mapping to k star, but we're identifying them all. This is isomorphic to n cross k star by the map phi n psi goes to n phi 0 psi. Okay, maybe that was too complicated to do on the board. I don't know. Anyway. The main point is you shouldn't be too frightened of these pullbacks, but it's where one loses intuition as to what's going on. Okay. So that was the first point. So that's really what allows you to think of the standard log point as really 0 sitting inside A1. Here's another thing you can do, and this is also a very popular thing to do, is suppose we have a flat family. There are many situations, so maybe this is a projective family of non-singular varieties degenerating to something normal crossings at one point. So maybe you have a point 0 s, and you have the fiber x0 contained in here. Let's say that f is a curve, a non-singular curve. And then we get, of course, a morphism of these log structures coming from the divisors, because the inverse image of 0 is precisely equal to x0, so we're all right. You get a morphism of log schemes. And then we can go through this process and restrict this log structure, pull back this log structure to x0 and to 0. So this gives a map from x0 to 0. So this is the this is the standard log point. And this has the log structure mx restricted to x0 in the sense of pullback. Okay, so now what are we dealing with? We have a morphism of log schemes. This is a standard log point. It's a point that knows it's sitting inside a one-dimensional smooth curve. And this is something that knows it's sitting inside a family in some way. But we've thrown out most information. So here are a few, just to sort of get you to realize the power of this. So let's take a case, say, where x0 is simple normal crossings. Okay, so then one can recover from x0 a whole bunch of things. You can actually recover. I'm not telling you how to do this. I just want you to appreciate the power of what we're doing here. We can recover from x0 the topology, if we're working over the complex numbers, of a general fiber. That's over C. Okay, so I'm saying, you know, in general, if I just give you some normal crossings variety, you have no idea how you're supposed to be smoothing it. The log structure knows how it's being smoothed, and you can recover the topology, and you can recover the limiting mixed Hausdorff structure. So this is, I decided to mention this in the context of the question about whether this is our first order information. It's a lot more. You can see the monodromy. It's really hiding here, but in fact, you can construct the inverse image of a circle topologically. See the topological monodromy. Okay, so there's a lot of information hiding here, and that's, you know, one of the great things about log structures. Okay, what example was I up to? Is there anyone taking notes?
13.
No, it wasn't 13.
Well,
now 4. Okay. Okay, so here's another thing called key example. I think every other example I told you, except for the zeroth, was a key example too, but this one is going to be really important. So let's let now P be a toric monoid. What does that mean? I.e., there exists a strictly convex rational polyhedral cone sigma contained in some vector space Rn, and P is just a set of integral points of the cone sigma. Well, this is a standard situation when you're talking about toric geometry. You're always considering monoids of this flavor. And then you usually talk about the monoid ring, so K bracket P, that's just as a K vector space, you just sum over all P, take K times the symbol Z to the P, and you define multiplication Z to the P times Z to the P prime is equal to Z to the P plus P prime. Okay, usual just like a group ring, but it's a P is a monoid. Okay, good. And then we can take, for example, what I'll write as X of P is just the spec of this. So that's an affine toric variety. So this now carries a canonical log structure. And it's described in two ways, either as, well, first of all, I can describe it as a divisorial log structure. So you have a natural divisor, so a boundary of XP. So this is the union of toric divisors of XP, or put another way, it's the complement of the big torus orbit in XP. And so that's, of course, by definition, a divisor in XP. And so we can take the divisorial log structure for that.
So
in general, the log structure won't be that good. So this is an example. Simple normal crossings is an example of the sort of thing that a log structure makes it appear smooth. And I'm going to make that more precise. We're going to allow some more general singularities that are going to come out of this example. We'll get to it this lecture.
Singular and irreducible doesn't really give you that much.
Yeah, so for example, if you had a cuspidal cubic curve, that's really bad. That's the log structure there is really ugly at the singular point.
Okay. But is simple important?
No, that only, let's erase it. It depends on whether you want to work in the atoll or is risky to pop. So, yeah, I didn't say it, but really everything should be in the atoll topology too. Okay, so the other way of describing it is via the chart. P goes to K bracket P. I didn't define chart. Via the pre-log structure. What's a pre-log structure? It should be a map from a sheaf of monoids. So I'll take the constant sheaf P on XP. So I'm going to the structure sheaf of XP. And this is the most obvious thing you can write down. You send P to Z to the P. Okay, so obviously these are functions that only vanish. First of all, they're regular functions, and they only vanish on the boundary. They're monomials in the interior of the big torus, so of course they're invertible there. And it turns out that these are defined the same log structures. Okay, so with this example, I can now tell you about the log structures we really do like. So definition, a log scheme is fine saturated, which is usually abbreviated FS, if atoll locally there exists charts P to, giving the definition, let me just say the definition of smooth morphism carries over to morphisms FS log schemes. and we get a notion of log smoothness. So I have just failed to tell you what the definition of log smooth is, but I'm going to give you a proposition which is much better than the definition. So a proposition, f from x to y is log smooth if at all locally there is a commutative diagram x to y to spec t is to spec z bracket q. Okay, so a tall locally meaning I'm really replacing x and y by a tall open subsets of x and y.
So from now on everything is time saturated?
That's right, yeah. Okay, with, first of all, horizontal arrows are charts for the log structure. On X and Y, in other words, the log structure, the canonical log structure here pulls back to the given log structure on X, the log structure here pulls back to the given log structure on Y. So I just said this is commutative. I didn't say this was, for example, Cartesian, but you do get that an induced map from X to the fiber product. So the induced map, and I'll write this underlying the fact that we're dealing with schemes, not log schemes. Right, so we have a map to the fiber product just induced by this commutative diagram, and we demand that this be smooth in the ordinary sense. So smooth is a morphism of schemes. And finally, one more condition, the right-hand vertical arrow is induced by monoid homomorphism. It has to go the other way, right? Q to P. That will induce a map from monoid rings and hence a morphism of schemes. And then there's some unfortunate hypotheses I have to write down to make this correct, which will almost never be relevant. Well, will never be relevant for us. So when I write group, I mean the growth and degree group. Technically, of course, what is it's just the lattice z to the n that we were using earlier. So the kernel of this map. And the torsion part of the co-kernel of Q group to P group are finite groups with orders invertible on X. So if you're in characteristic zero, you don't worry about it. Well, except you need this to be finite. Yeah, so since we're going to be doing everything in characteristic zero, this largely isn't important. But you do need a finite kernel anyway. Okay, so let me just give an example, then stop. If I take A2 to A1, this is induced by a map, right, that of monoids. Right, this is the affine variety given by spec of k bracket n squared. This is spec k bracket n. Let's take the map y goes to x times y. And then we take, that's given by the map monoids, 1 goes to 1, 1. Okay, so we have this morphism of log schemes, which is log smooth, even though we have singular fibers. It's certainly not smooth, because the fiber over the origin is x times y equals 0. And even better, let's take one of these fiber diagrams, 0 to A1 to A2, take the fiber product. This gives us the 0 set of xy equals to 0. So if we take the log structures over here, given by pullback of log structures here, we get something log smooth too. So here we have just this singular variety, a normal crossing variety, which is being viewed as being smooth in this world. So that's the sense in which log geometry makes singular things smooth. It doesn't make anything smooth, but it makes things of this flavor smooth. And more generally, these kind of toroidal crossings, fibers of maps between monoidal maps between toric varieties, look smooth. Okay, so I'll end there for the day. Yeah, so I'm going to tell you next time. It knows a bit more than a tangent vector. It also knows, so, well, one way to think about it, it's slightly more complicated than I'm going to say now, but if you, you know, think about a tangent vector, that's kind of like a point on the blow up. So it knows a point on the. In other words, if you have a map from a standard log point, spec k dagger into, let's say, one of these spaces xp, and we go to the origin, the zero-dimensional stratum of xp, it really specifies some blow-up of the origin, at the origin, so kind of some subdivision of the corresponding fan, and a point on that. So there's on the exceptional divisor. So there's more information than just a tangent vector. But it feels somewhat similar. But it's hard, you know, it's not something you can make precise, I think. I mean, you can make what this means precise, but it's not a precise correspondence.
Yeah. So this here, the last thing that you made was this zero was equipped as a standard log point.
That's right.
And then you were saying that this thing living over it was smooth.
That's right.
And so in general, I guess if you have something which is normal crossings, then it will be smooth over the standard log.
That's right, yeah. Well, yeah, one should be a bit careful. So it has to be normal crossings and think that it's in a family.
And think that it's
right. So, for example, if I just took the
appropriate log structure.
Yeah, so if I just took, for example, the triangle in P2 and took the induced log structure, divisory log structure on that, it's normal crossings, it doesn't live over the standard log point because it doesn't sort of deform in a family inside P2.
But inside something else.
Right, but that something else would change the log structure. So that triangle knows it's sitting inside P2, so it knows it doesn't deform in a smooth family.
Good enough. So do you want to go to dinner? Want to go to Ruby's? You have a piece of that?